You're listening to The Point. Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket are the islands most of us associate with this region, but if you look a little closer at a map or chart, there are dozens of smaller islands, many with a rich and varied history. Panakis is one of those islands. It's part of the Elizabeth Island chain that separates Buzzards Bay from Vineyard Sound. WCAI's Brian Morris visited Panakis last month and brings us this audio postcard.
It takes a little over an hour to get to Panakis Island by boat from Woods Hole. We skirt the western edge of the Elizabeth Island chain past Nashon, Pask, and Nashawena. Panakis is almost an afterthought, a tiny island of only 75 acres. Cuttyhunk lies just to the southwest, with the Gay Head Cliffs on Martha's Vineyard visible in the distance. Jim Newman is the boat captain. He calls himself an all-round resource guy for Panakis, running trips about once a week in summer to ferry bird researchers to and from the island. He also takes groups of visitors on day trips, like the women who've come to spend the day creating artwork on the island. Panakis is wild, desolate, and beautiful. No roads or cars, only a couple of weathered buildings, and hundreds of noisy nesting terns, gulls, and other shorebirds. As the women scatter with their sketch pads, Jim Newman and I head up to the island's highest point, about a 10-minute walk from the dock. This is the site of the former Anderson School, established in the 1870s.
There was an eminent marine biologist named Louis Agassiz, who was the intellectual force behind it, and then a gentleman named Anderson, who I think owned the island. Not sure, but he was wealthy and funded it. And so they started a school here just for the summer, based on the fact that you could get specimens locally and, more importantly, have clean seawater to flow through a laboratory. And they built a huge building, far larger than anything we've got now. There's a dormitory and lab space. And then they built the cisterns. You can see the way they're constructed is round, brick-lined holes.
Louis Agassiz died in 1873, and the Anderson School only lasted about another 2 years. But it was reconstituted in 1888 in Woods Hole as what we know today as the Marine Biological Laboratory. In the early 20th century, the state of Massachusetts was trying to determine what to do with people afflicted with leprosy. The public dreaded the disease, convinced it was highly contagious, and they wanted the lepers out. The state proposed creating so-called leprosariums near Boston and on Cape Cod, but fierce public outcry killed both those plans. Finally, in 1904, the state bought Panakis and sent 5 lepers there. Remnants of that time are still present, like a pair of crumbling old pillars along one of the trails.
These pillars are from the leper colony, and they mark the point that the lepers were not allowed past. It was basically quarantined on that side of the island and clean on this side of the island. And so there was a house here that was the doctor who looked after them and his wife.
That was Dr. Frank Parker and his wife Marion.
They were sort of the heroes of this story because they very selflessly dedicated themselves to these poor lepers who were outcasts.
What was life like for the lepers during the time that they were here?
Well, it was pretty bleak, I think. They were their cottages. I'll show you the foundations for their cottages. They're on the west side of the island, which is the one that's exposed to the winds, especially in the wintertime. It's pretty raw and cold and kind of nasty out here in the winter. I mean, it's a magnificent place in a lot of ways, but it's not an easy place to be in the wintertime.
At the western edge of the island is a solitary moss-covered concrete structure, or what's left of it, that once was the laundry building for the leper colony.
You know, it was something else that they had to do themselves. Nobody wanted to take it off the island or have non-lepers do the laundry. So they had a laundry facility over here, and it's along with the cottages, but the cottages were all built of wood with a concrete foundation, and wanted a big boiler. They made it a concrete structure, so there wouldn't be a fear of having a fire. So when they closed the leprosarium, they burned everything that would burn, but the one remaining structure from it is that's still upright is the laundry.
Any reason why they built the houses in the laundry on this side of the island?
I think it was trying to get them as far as possible from the house where the people who weren't already infected were going to be living, but without much care for the well-being of the people with leprosy.
Many of the lepers were of different nationalities.
Chinese, definitely Eastern Europeans. There were a few Jews, and we have Jewish plaques on their cemeteries. We actually brought a rabbi out in the 1990s to sanctify their graves.
Those graves, 14 in all, lie in a small cemetery on the north end of the island. The cemetery is little more than a small plot of windswept ground, with most of the gravestones set flat into the earth.
Isabel Barros.
Isabel Barros, right. Died March 13th, 1915.
Julia Lowe.
1864 to 1920, so she would have been...
56.
Yep. In 1921, the federal government decided to move all lepers in the U.S. to a federal leprosarium in Louisiana. 13 surviving patients on Penikese were moved off the island and taken there. Though the lepers on Penikese were viewed as medically unredeemable, this remote island would eventually serve as a place for rehabilitation when the Penikese Island School opened many years later in 1973.
To your right, you'll see the wood shop, which is where we used to do all our woodworking stuff, make cutting boards, birdhouses, Adirondack chairs, all kinds of stuff like that with the kids, part of our vocational program.
That's Andrew Avalt from Cambridge, a former staff member of the Penikese Island School. He's come on the trip today, as he often does, to do some caretaking on the island and spend a few days chilling out here. Avalt says at the time the school was founded, there was a turn away from incarceration and towards more therapeutic types of programs.
And the state was encouraging people, if they wanted to start their own therapeutic programs, and they would contract out to them instead of putting the kids in lockup.
The Penikese Island School was a 9-month program. Most of the kids came from rough backgrounds, drugs, gangs, or broken homes.
Now, I have to say, just envisioning being a kid before the judge, and the judge says, you know what, we're not going to lock you up, we're going to send you to this remote island way down there in the middle of nowhere. How did most of the kids react to that when they would first hear that this is where they were coming?
Almost all of them were in a state of absolute shock when they first showed up out here.
I can well imagine. And then once they were here and involved in some of the programs, did they eventually come to benefit from being down here?
Almost all of them ended up settling in really well to the program, sometimes especially kids from the inner city.
Who had probably never had any exposure to nature of any kind.
No exposure to it. It was kind of like hitting the reset button for them. They had to adapt to a whole new way of life being out here. But I think the immersion and the fact that like you had staff out here living with you 24 hours a day that would be out here for either 4 or 5 days at a time would really help them get into the rhythm.
The results of the school's immersion therapy were mixed.
Most of our kids went back to get into trouble with the law when they got out of here. But a lot of them have gone on to have successful lives, go to college, have kids, holding steady jobs now, you know, and then we have a lot of them that are in prison right now, too.
At first, it seems odd that a former staffer at the Penikese Island School would want to come back just to spend some time relaxing. But after being out here for much of the day, I understand the appeal. Penikese is currently owned by the state, but it's the birds who really run this place, as they have throughout this island's strange history. Pulling away from the dock, we see the tents that bird researchers have set up on a restricted part of the island. They'll camp out here for 4 or 5 days before they too board a boat and head back to the real world. For The Point, I'm Brian Morris on Penikese Island.
We'll have images from Brian's visit to Penikese at our website, capeandislands.org. Joining us now is David Kohorian, Program Director of the Penikese Island Retreats Program, who's also an artist and art educator. Welcome.
Well, thank you.
Lucky Brian. I couldn't go that day. But,
I couldn't go either.
Yeah. But anyway, Penikese Island seems to work magic on everyone, even as Brian said, he could get just spending a little bit of time there. Describe what makes it so special.
I think there's a couple things. One, geographically, it's set up in such a way that you feel far enough away from distractions of the world that you feel safe, but you're not so far away that you feel cut off and isolated. And it's a really unique kind of geographical situation that you don't get in most places. The other thing is because of the nature of the way it's set up, it's mostly birds and just a couple of buildings from the school. There's not much going on in this. Then the buildings itself, it's heated by wood. You cook by wood. You read by oil
kerosene
lamps at night.
Yeah.
And so it resets and recalibrates you to a more human way of existence.
No
and
Wi-Fi.
Technically there's capability for Wi-Fi, but
best if you don't.
It's highly controlled. And when we bring kids out there, we take away the phones because we want them to be present in the experience. And it really is a magical experience. And being overnight, it's one thing for the day, but to be there overnight is something really special. It's watching the sun slowly go down, having the lights, the oil lamps illuminated, and it brings the energy down, it calms people down, and when you have a little light like that, it brings people together. Mm-hmm. It's like moths around the flame, and so you can really control where people go, and it's very calming and soothing. It has an amazing effect on people.
Brian's piece discussed the history of Penikese, from the marine research to the leper colony and then a school for troubled youth. Explain the latest chapter for Penikese, this island retreat.
So after basically a 45-year history of running the program with the boys on it and a couple of attempts to do a residential rehabilitation center, we decided to go in a slightly different direction, looking at the fact that it was so beneficial to everybody who goes there. Everyone is recovering from something in some level. And we really wanted to get more people out there and have a meaningful experience. So we came up with an idea of having retreats. Typical retreat is a weekend kind of a thing. You go over on a Friday, come back on a Sunday, Sunday afternoon. And the focus would be generally sort of a mindfulness kind of kind of an experience. A lot of the mindfulness is built into just living on the island, so it's not heavily programmatic. But there's that. And also any group that wants to get away, it could be a yoga group, it could be a healing group of some sort, a group of veterans, a group.
You say group, how many can go?
So we have 17 beds.
Oh, 17, okay.
So on the one hand, it's a problem that we don't have a lot of beds because there are larger groups who would like to take advantage of it. And economically, it makes more sense to have more people. Mm-hmm. But the real strength of it is that it is small, mm-hmm. because there's it's a really intense and meaningful experience to work with a small group of people in a situation like that. And I've seen kids come off that island and just say that, you know, it was really one of the best experiences they've ever had in their life. So.
Yeah, once you take away all the technology, they usually do enjoy themselves.
It's amazing. They sit around and they read ghost stories to each other at night. My daughter's a fan of the Ouija board, so she terrified everybody with that. They'll play music, they play pool, they hang out. People who normally didn't interact, become really close friends. They work together to prepare the meals and things. It's an amazing experience. So we're doing that.
You mentioned that the accommodations are rustic. You have a wood stove for cooking, the oil lamps. This isn't the Ritz.
No.
So are there opportunities for people to do day trips as well as these retreats?
Absolutely. So we're doing, we have day trips and they're basically as needed. So if you have a group of 10 people that would like to go out or more, the boat capacity is 22, including the captain and steward and stuff. We can arrange a trip pretty much any day. There is a regular weekly service trip that goes out on Saturdays, and that's a great opportunity if somebody or a couple of people would like to kind of hitch a ride and check out the island for a few hours. Just let us know in advance so we can
make sure there's room.
You know what,
50 people showing up to get on that little boat. Yeah.
Right. Make sure coordinate the time and so forth.
866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Now, can anyone visit if they're out there on their boat or kayak?
So the island's owned by the state, so it's open to everyone. It's it's like a regular state park. There's no camping, no pets, no alcohol,
no
pets, smoking.
Because
it's a bird sanctuary.
Yeah. And we could hear all the birds in Brian's piece there. And I should mention that I got a call from Ian Ives from Mass Audubon, who wanted us to mention, because I think this is a great idea. They're going to be doing birding trips out there starting on Sundays, September 2nd through October 7th, which is a great opportunity because a lot of that, there's some area there that you can't really go on because of the bird research, right?
Depending on the time of the year. So right now it's starting to open up a little bit, but during the nesting season, there's a part of the island that's kind of closed off. We don't want to disturb the birds.
Be kind of good to go with somebody from Mass Audubon who can tell you what you're seeing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So what kinds of groups are you hoping are going to utilize the island? I mean, we heard there are a couple of ladies who went out to paint.
Kind of a dual program thing. So we're thinking there's generally speaking, a summertime group, which could be, you know, people who are interested in painting, or we have a kayaking group that's interested in going out, a couple of mindfulness groups. There's a recovery group that wants to go out, yoga groups, mm-hmm. anything of that nature that's educational, dealing with wellness, the arts, anything mm-hmm. like that would be ideal. And then we also really want to partner with schools and scouting groups and mm-hmm. things, especially during the winter, during the school
yeah.
season.
So this is going to be year-round then?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. All right, so how about the ticks? Are there a lot of ticks?
There are no ticks.
No ticks?
There are no ticks.
Oh, my gosh, sign me up for sure.
Right? There's a report I heard that one tick was found a year or two ago, and that's
wow.
the only tick that I'm aware of.
Wow. So. All right, so it would seem like this would be a great location for schools or scouting groups, wouldn't it?
It really is an amazing resource, I think, especially for schools and scouting groups in the area. And it's an experience that you can't duplicate anywhere else. First of all, you have the adventure of the boat ride. There's an hour, you know, mm-hmm. on a boat, which is exciting in itself. Yeah. And in only the best ways. And
so you won't be going, obviously, when there's stormy days, the boat doesn't go. When it's, yeah.
It's up to the captain.
Yeah.
He makes the
yeah.
call, you know. Yeah. So
so has the idea of Penasquise Island as a school been, like, put to rest? Is there any chance that's going to be resurrected?
I'm not entirely sure about a school, but there is a hope, I think, at some point that it could go back to a full-time treatment center. Mm-hmm. It's more about the funding. The mm-hmm. plans are there. It's and we've looked at it quite extensively, and there's been some really great sort of plans put together. But to hire the staff to train everybody to operate on that island, it can be a really expensive proposition. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really, really effective yeah. proposition, but it's hard to come up with the money.
We were talking about the birds, but what other wildlife is there? Is there any other?
There's some rabbits.
Rabbits, okay. But there's no skunks, no deer.
No. Yeah. That's why we have no ticks.
Yeah, which is a good. So you got rabbits. And I imagine the bird life there would be, especially kind of shorebirds, it must be amazing.
Yeah, it really is, especially at this time of year. Because they've all just hatched, and so you get the fledglings yeah. going around.
It seems like you can't escape them, because in Brian's piece, we just heard birds
yeah.
behind him
no,
the
they're
entire
everywhere.
Time.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
All right, so we mentioned the state owns Penasquise, yeah. and it's designated as a bird sanctuary. So does the Penasquise Island School still have a lease on the island? And if so, how
so there's a section of the island that's kind of cordoned off for the school, and there's a long-term lease with the state to have that and to operate it as a school, but I think it's so as long as we're fulfilling the basic mission of educating and helping people, things like that, that's in mm-hmm. line with our core mission, that I think that we're all set. And then we operate the buildings, we own the buildings, so a visitor can come to the island, but they can't go in the buildings.
Right,
unless
gotcha.
They're
unless
with,
you're part of you.
With Penasquise yeah, or something, because
gotcha.
That's a separate thing.
Okay. Steven's giving us a call from Chatham. Hi, Steven.
Hi. I went out on the, my wife and I went out last fall on the Mass Audubon day tour of Penasquise Island, and I noticed that the tour guides were using a book that was written by my Uncle Tom Buckley from Chatham, and it's called Penasquise Island of Hope, and he was a counselor out there, I think, in the 70s and 80s. And did a history, so it's something that the Audubon guides use as their guide for the history and touring and so forth. But it's you probably could Google it, Penasquise Island of Hope.
Yeah, Stephen, tell us about your trip. What did you were there as many birds as I'm imagining?
Well, it's not like the Tern Colony in Chatham,
right.
Where they're bombing you.
Bombing you, because get away from my babies, yeah.
But so I maybe we just hit it at the right day, but it was not hazardous.
And you enjoyed it, obviously.
Yes, and having gone there, because I knew my uncle had been there and had written the book and so forth, so that was certainly, we're not birders, but I was going because he had gone there and written about the thing. Yeah. So, like I said, he's unfortunately passed on, but his book is still around in local stores, and you can find it or Google it.
Right.
So it's still available.
All right, Stephen, thanks. Thanks for sharing
Thank you.
That. Yeah, so see, even people who aren't birders are going over there to see
right?
that.
Something for
now, when did you first go over?
It was about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. There was an ad in the newspaper for a marine expedition leader, and I thought, that sounds like a job for me. I didn't know what it was, but it was part of the first rehab program that came after the school part of it closed.
And what was your, like, when you first stepped off the boat there, what was your first impression?
Something magical happens. It's funny. It's like all your problems, all the things that follow you around and yell in your ear, during the, they all just disappear when you when you step off the boat. It just gets quiet, and you just, it's like the world stops turning, and you have that respite. It's amazing.
What about kids? How long does it take the kids to adjust to that? Because, you know, usually, I'm just thinking, I know we sometimes take vacations and no cell phones or anything. The first couple of days, you know, you got the teenagers, it's so boring. And then all of a sudden, there's this transformation.
So,
of
interesting thing with the teenagers, we hear about how they can't be separated from their from their technology. I found just the opposite. I found that they were looking for an excuse to get away from their technology. And several of the kids even told me, it's like, I didn't even bring my phone just because it was my excuse to get away from it. And I've had a kid tell me, you know, it's like late at night. I'm like, why, you know, you're junior in high school. It's like raining and it's January. Why are you here? You know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I look forward to this all the time, to come out to a place like this, just to get away from the stress and stuff that I have to deal with.
Yeah.
Just
it's tough to be a kid nowadays.
It's tough to be a kid, and they actually like to get away from that stuff.
Yeah. So. Well, we'll have a slideshow of the images from Brian Morris's trip to Penikese, along with information about the Penikese Island Retreat Program at our website, capeandislands.org. David Kahorian, Program Director of the Penikese Island Retreats Program, thanks so much for coming in and sharing this little bit of magic with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.